was National Autism Awareness Month, and many of us know someone on the autism spectrum or someone with a child or other family member on the spectrum. We might even know someone who's on the spectrum and we have no idea. So, what is autism? What behaviors or lack of behaviors should parents look for? And if they notice any of these, what should they do? Thanks for joining us as we address this important issue in two parts. We'll get some answers from two experienced pediatric therapists, and we'll hear from the mothers of two young children diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder as they share their experiences. First up in today's episode, Terry and Kavita talk about the signs that led them to seek professional help.
We had our 18-month appointment, and the pediatrician was somewhat concerned, although they never seemed that interested in the MCHAT, and partly because Caden's really good at eye contact and masking and very social, so because of all these things, a lot of people just kind of missed it at first. But he had speech delay, so he did hearing tests, and that all cleared out, so then there continued to be concern. But for me, one of the main things was we'd have situations where Caden would get really stressed out. Like I remember one particular story time at a library where circles of people would stress him out. There's this one where he ran out into the middle of the circle, he's probably about 20 months old, and started banging his head on the floor. And this was really common for him at the time, to bang his head on the floor. And I didn't really make the connection then, but I knew something was different. One thing that confused me was that toddlers have tantrums. So being able to separate normal tantruming from possibly being on the spectrum, that was confusing.
Yeah, Elliot definitely had those very intense feelings about things. And especially like when when he wouldn't get his way, or he couldn't, something was closed and we had to leave, or, you know, the snack ran out, or things like that would set him off and he would get really upset for a long time. It's interesting that you talk about the speech delay, because I did have Elliot's speech evaluated somewhere around 18 to 20 months, because I was going to have him be a typical peer in a preschool program. But I felt like his language was odd. He had a ton of words, but I was the only one who could understand them. He would say hla for water, just like not at all like water. Ippy for orange. Like he just had like 100 words like this where I knew exactly what they meant, but they sounded nothing like the real word. Harrr was helicopter. So I'd hear him play.
Sound like that.
Yeah, he'd be playing in the corner and go, harrr. I'm like, oh, he must have his helicopter. And so I just wanted to make sure, you know, his speech was on track. And by the time he had the evaluation, he had made some progress, and he actually had like a really incredible vocabulary. I remember like before 2 years old, he was saying things like, we'd go to North Bend Bar and Grill and he would ask for the humongous cinnamon roll, and just humongous cinnamon roll. But then he wouldn't answer a yes or no question. And I have a video I remember teaching him to like shake his head yes, like, and it was really exaggerated. Once he got it, he would imitate me, like a really big nod when he would say yes. And I remember thinking like, well, this is weird that I have to teach him yes, but you know, whatever, he can say humongous, like that's cool. And so I felt like, again, that masking, that like he had such really high splinter skills in some areas, but then these basics, like, you know, being able to move on when your goldfish run out, or being able to say yes when someone answers you a question, like he couldn't do that.
For me, it was, he did qualify for speech therapy because he was very speech delayed. And then through Encompass, we did a year of the 2-3 program for speech therapy. And Caden really progressed with that, because before that, I couldn't even get his attention. So she taught all these spark routines, and that was a lot of what we did. Most of them were songs or riddles at first, and that was the only thing that could get his attention to be able to start having this back and forth conversation of engaging with me. So that was very helpful from 2 years old to 3 years old to do that program. He also immediately was diagnosed with sensory processing disorder. So for a while there, I thought that was the main thing making him different. He clearly had all sorts of sensory issues. Some of them were undersensitive, others oversensitive, and still ongoing. And I learned a lot about that. But it wasn't until about a year later that he started having a lot of rigidity in addition to that. Started doing all these loops, knock something off a table, go jump 3 times in one spot, go yell a particular word, and then do the same loop over and over again. And I started videotaping that and getting concerned and that's when we had him evaluated and he was diagnosed on the spectrum.
Yeah, it's interesting how those other things going on, like the sensory, was kind of a big thing for you to look past. For us, it was ADHD. My husband has ADHD, so like as soon as Elliot was born, he's a boy. I'm like, I know it's a high likelihood that this child is going to have ADHD, so I'm looking for it. You know, all toddlers are busy, right? Well, not all, but many toddlers are busy. And Elliot certainly fit that profile. He was always on the go. He joked that he was like, you know, zero or 60. When he fell asleep, he was literally dead to the world. You could not even pry his eyeballs open. But the moment he woke up, he was jumping out of the bed and like crashing down the stairs. And so it was like on or off. And same thing, like if we would try to go for a walk, he would be like sprinting ahead. And then suddenly he's laying on the ground and like won't move at all. And so it's like, it's just either like go or stop. And there's nothing in between. So it's hard to function at either of those levels. And so I thought that was mostly it. Like, okay, it's the ADHD. And, you know, we're just going to kind of work through this, the preschool years. And when he was getting towards kindergarten, I had him do an ADHD evaluation. And I wanted to try some medications so that he would be kind of stable on a medication going into kindergarten. And it was really when he got on the ADHD medication that it became very obvious to me that many of those quirks really were autism as well. The attention thing and the go or stop was so all I could, I don't know if, looking back, I don't know if it was all I could see or if it was all that was presenting from him. But then once that was kind of under control, like you said, the rigidity really came out. He has these weird things where he likes to get in the car on the same side of the car as his little sister, and only before she gets in the car, and he has to get out of the car before she gets out of the car. And it like can lead to really intense meltdowns if that routine gets disrupted. And so it's one of those things where you're like, do I push it or do I just let you do it? Because you can't have a meltdown on the side of the street in Seattle. Like, but yeah, a lot of that, the rigidity, kind of the awkward social, right? Like he does make eye contact. He greets people. He's social, but it's a little different. Like I remember when he was three, he was really into blood cells, blood, like the heart circulation, blood types, blood cells. And around 3 years old, he would go up to greet people by asking them. He wouldn't even say hi. You just go straight up to him, brand new person he's never met. What's your blood type? And like, I thought it was cute. I thought it was like, wow, my kid's so smart. He's asking about blood types. And looking back, I'm like, no, that's ridiculous. What is the three-year-old even knowing about blood types?
Caden's still like that at six. And on the trails, people still think it's cute. But yeah, similarly, he's very good at starting a conversation and he can see when someone's smiling and he continues to engage, but he also doesn't really know where the boundaries are. He can't read that the next person that he comes across on the trail isn't interested in talking to him and is turning away and, you know, not reading the body language, those social cues that not everyone else, but most people are able to kind of more naturally pick up on those body cues. And with him, I have to teach him because it's not at all natural.
Yeah, and that's like you have this person, or not, I don't know if you do, but there's this perception that people who are autistic aren't social, right? But it's not for Caden and Elliot, that's not true. Like they are social, just in maybe unusual ways. Like Elliot, when he was two or three on the playground, you know, we don't know anybody, we're just going to a playground, but he would go up to everyone and just want to be their best friend and like drag them along. And he's not seeing that this little girl is hiding behind her mom and running away from him, closing her. And he's like, does she speak a different language? No, she just doesn't want to talk to you. You have to give her space. Because he was so social, like, so like, I have a plan. We're going to go play this game. Come on. Why aren't you coming?
We're now joined by Missy Budworth, a speech-language pathologist, and Kim Hall, a licensed and registered pediatric occupational therapist. Both are early intervention team supervisors with Encompass. Welcome and thanks for talking with us today.
So many of us know someone on the autism spectrum. Can you explain exactly what autism is?
Sure. Autism spectrum disorder is a developmental disorder that affects someone's behavior and communication skills. So developmental meaning that it appears early on in childhood.
So if parents or other caregivers are concerned that a child might have autism, what kind of characteristics should they be looking for? And then also, at about what age do these characteristics start showing up?
That's a really good question. A lot of parents want to know, what am I supposed to be looking for? The truth is, every child with autism is very different from the next. So there are several things you can look for that may be common, and they've really categorized those nicely for certain assessment tools. But some basic ones are, you may notice poor eye contact, no pointing, so the child wouldn't be pointing at things around the room or outside. If you're pointing, they may not look at all about what you're pointing toward. Less language, maybe there's some, but it could be echolalic, which would be echoing just repetitive what you say or what a TV show says. There's also some tantrums that happen, and most parents don't understand why is my child melting down? Nothing happened, but to them there was a disruption in their environment, or maybe somebody changed something that they didn't want changed. There's a lot of rigidity with their play too. You may see repetitive lining up toys, just doing things that aren't typically seen with other children in the way that they play. Even pretend play is disrupted typically. Do you have anything to add?
The things that stick out to me in addition to that are maybe not responding when their name is called by pausing or looking toward the person who's speaking to them. Really just that lack of reciprocal interaction. So that might be learning that when we have a conversation, we take turns speaking, or even just that nonverbal during play, such as rolling a ball back and forth, might be challenging.
I want to add too that with all of those characteristics that you can see with children on the spectrum, that it is a spectrum, and that just because you see one of those characteristics doesn't necessarily mean your child has autism, that you want to investigate with your provider more about what that characteristic might mean. So it could be if your child's not answering to their name, they have a hearing issue going on. So then you would need to be referred to an audiologist and rule that out. A lot of times when we're evaluating children in our program in early intervention, we do support and help a parent look at those things closely to rule out other things first. So that's very important that parents keep in mind not to get too worried when they see some of these characteristics appear, but look into them more and find out what is the cause.
So as far as the age goes, clearly with developmental milestones, we kind of have typical things at some different ages. So is there a way you can give an indication about what age should parents be looking for some of these behaviors or lack of behaviors?
Mm-hmm. Researchers have found that children typically do show some of these behaviors before 18 months of age. There are even some motor milestones that seem different early on, even before 12 months. But we don't typically call those out and look at that. We wait for the child to start to develop language and more social interaction, and then the signs are a little more obvious. But I know reliably diagnosing it really doesn't happen until between 18 and 24 months.
So if parents do feel their child has some of these characteristics, what should they do? What would be the first step?
So if someone is concerned and might have questions around their child, they're encouraged to speak with their child's pediatrician, and their pediatrician should have a screening tool to walk through with the family to determine if further testing is needed.
So we do know that kids develop at different paces and that there are generally accepted developmental milestones. So who can make an autism diagnosis?
The best first step is to go to the pediatrician, and they can do screening. After that, really what's recommended is that a parent go to a center of excellence, because they can really do a deep dive into a full evaluation for diagnosing autism. Sometimes it's even over the course of more than one day that they need to do the testing, because it is pretty involved. And the reason why the center of excellence is important is because it opens up more resources for a family. So a lot of families like to look into ABA therapy, which is applied behavioral analysis. It's research to help a lot of children on the spectrum, and they won't be able to access that therapy if they don't go through a center of excellence. If they have state insurance, here in Washington State, it'd be Apple Health. So that's a really big reason why they've said that, and there is a list online of every place around the state that offers, that is considered a center of excellence.
So what options do families have if their pediatrician isn't concerned and says something like, oh, let's give it another 6 months?
That's a great question. I think that this is a great time to point out that parents are experts on their kids and they need to trust their gut. And if their gut is saying, huh, I still have concerns despite what this doctor is telling me, you can always get a second opinion. So going to another pediatrician is always encouraged if you don't leave that meeting feeling like you're getting what you need.
Yeah, that's kind of hard for some people though, isn't it?
It is. Yeah.
It's definitely a challenge. I think that we've seen time and time again, though, the importance of advocating for your child and how important that is when you know your child may not be getting what they need.
I'd add, if your child is between, 12 months to 3 years old and you are concerned and your physician wants to wait, you can call early intervention programs and yourself without your doctor's telling you or calling them for you, you can call and ask for an evaluation that would really help you know more about your child's development. They're not typically going to diagnose autism, but they can still support the areas that autism is impacting. So that is a place to start, and then you're not waiting per se. You're really involved in getting therapy and help for your child while you may be waiting a little bit for the diagnosis.
That wraps up part one of the Encompass Parent Talks podcast on autism awareness. We've heard several helpful tips on what autism can look like and when to seek professional help. Join us next time as our guests discuss different therapies and strategies for managing autism, as well as school transitions and support from family, friends, and the community. For additional resources and to subscribe to the Encompass Parent Talks podcast, please visit our website, www.encompassnw.org.